Hello, everyone, and welcome to McGill Care's webcast series supporting family and informal caregivers. I'm Claire Webster, a former caregiver, certified dementia care consultant, and founder of McGill University's Dementia Education Program. I work with a dynamic team of leading healthcare professionals to oversee the program, who include Dr. José Marais from the Division of Geriatric Medicine and Dr. Serge Gauthier, Professor Emeritus, formerly of the McGill University Research Center for Studies in Aging. McGill Cares is supported by the Amelia Saputo Community Outreach for Dementia Care. The McGill Dementia Education Program offers a comprehensive range of free resources to support and educate persons living with dementia, family and informal caregivers, healthcare professionals, medical students, and the public at large. One of our most important resources is the Dementia Companion Guide, which is available in 8 different languages, and it can be downloaded for free, or you can buy a copy on Amazon at a cost of $20, and all proceeds go to support our program. It's a very important resource, and I really encourage everyone to get a copy if possible. So many of us have been or are being touched by dementia. The biggest mission of our program is to educate and support people living with this disease and their care partners. This webcast is a very special edition of McGill Cares, where I have the privilege of interviewing a resilient woman, Marie Molyneux, who is caring for her husband, Kevin, a former Superior Court judge and passionate artist who was diagnosed in 2014 with Parkinson's disease and a year later with Lewy body dementia. Together, they have faced the devastating disease head on and have shared in a documentary film, which will be airing in this webcast, called Still Headroom, Parkinson's and the Power of Care. This short 20-minute film by Gianna McCabe and Jordan McTavish demonstrates with painful honesty how Marie and Kevin are dealing with the debilitating impact of the neurodegenerative disease and what their life has become. As this film highlights in great detail the progression of Kevin's illness, I feel that it is necessary to let our viewers know that it may be difficult for some people to watch. After the film, Marie and I will talk about how she and Kevin continue to face the challenges and joy of his illness. Over the years, Marie and Kevin have been tremendous philanthropists and have raised $200,000 for Parkinson's and dementia research. They are now turning their efforts to raising funds for the McGill University Dementia Education Program. I'm so moved. For which we are extremely grateful. I'm so grateful. To make a donation towards this fundraising initiative, please go to our website at mcgill.ca/dementia. Marie, welcome to McGill Cares.
Thank you so much for inviting me, Claire.
I wasn't expecting to get so emotional, but you know, when you reached out to me, it was probably last year, and shared your story, and I had the opportunity to visit with you in your home. It just amazes me so often when I meet resilient people like yourself. And it really is a privilege for me to interview you today and to share your story.
Oh, I'm so excited to be here because I think part of our journey, yours as a caregiver and mine, is to share what we are living and what we know. So thank you for your work.
So before we begin and before we share the film, maybe you can just talk to us a bit about your lives before Kevin's diagnosis. Because I know that you were living in Ontario. Talk to me about, you know, your career and a bit about Kevin. And then, what were the early signs and symptoms of the illness?
Yeah, so we were living in Toronto near Hyde Park, in a lovely old house, and Kevin was a judge of the Superior Court. He'd been the chair of the Ontario Labor Relations Board and a really successful mediator and arbitrator, and I was a senior federal public servant, and we had this lovely life with our combined income of federal public servants. And then all of a sudden things went a little off the rails I know now that it was before he became a judge, but right when he became a judge, I started to notice sleep habits that were different. His behavior was different. And I just chalked it up to stress, big change in lifestyle, becoming a judge.
And how old was he when the symptoms began?
When they began, he was probably early 50s. The diagnosis happened around 57 after doing the usual tour of every single type of physician you can imagine until finally the neurologist took 30 seconds to have him walk down the hall, put his finger on his nose, fall back and said, Parkinson's. And then a year later, I said, you know, he's got this sleep disorder. He's doing things in his sleep that make me want to say, you're going to have to tell your colleagues on the court that you hit your wife when you're sleeping, because he would literally physically lash out. And he was a very quiet sleeper beforehand, and he's a very gentle man. So I didn't say that lightly. And the neurologist took a nanosecond. He goes, oh, Lewy body dementia. I said, And it did live in the family. We had one person who had Lewy body dementia, his aunt, who died a few years earlier. It was not confirmed with an autopsy, which is the only way you can actually confirm the existence of Lewy bodies. So we had a sense that it might exist. And his grandfather had died at a relatively young age of what we would now describe as dementia-related causes.
So as our viewers are about to see, this documentary is really an intimate look into your lives and, you know, and as well as the progression of the illness. Why did you decide to make a documentary about your life?
That's such a good question, because it is really intimate. And I think the main reason was that for me, the whole idea of having a story that I could focus on as we went through this journey became therapeutic for me. And Kevin is very, very private. He had no social media presence. He was an early adopter of Facebook, but never posted, just was a lurker if he ever checked it. And then I discovered Instagram through my daughter. She said, you love taking photos and videos. You're going to love Instagram. And it coincided with the diagnosis. And I realized that I could keep people in the loop much more easily. And it was a way of me sharing what was going on, or visits to the doctor, his behavior changes, his mobility changes. So that literally inspired it. And when Kevin realized that this was giving me purpose and joy, and then he started to paint, and I was capturing those stories, and that became part of the movie that you're going to see, and the earlier movie, Chasing Monsters, Parkinson's and the Power of Art. He was really happy to have me document. So he consents to all of these videos. And I often check with him, especially when they're particularly intimate.
Mm-hmm. I found, you know, having seen it prior to viewing it right now, what an important teaching tool also for medical students and for the public to really understand the progression. You know, it's one thing to be able to verbally describe symptoms, but when you can actually see the impact of such an illness, It's quite educational. And as I mentioned earlier, it may be difficult for some people to watch. So let's see the video.
Now the start of the song goes, as around the sun, the earth goes revolving. That right there, that's that B major 7.
Sometimes there are things that happen that you really don't see coming. Like the day that Kevin decided that he could go for a swim when I went up to get his medicine. And by the time I got back to the lake, he was in the water and he was face down. And I thought, are you looking at fish or drowning? And I said, oh my gosh, you're drowning.
And all of a sudden I didn't know what was going on. I felt disoriented.
And, it's because you fainted.
Well, that's right after. That was the diagnosis after epidural happened. That basically I panicked and ended up gulping water into my lungs. I dropped to the bottom of the water, the bottom of the lake, and was lying on my back looking up at the sky. I started yelling and kicking my legs, but I couldn't get myself up out of the water. Every time I tried to breathe, I drink some more water into my lungs.
That's because I saved you.
I was very distressed, very distressed.
This is the story of an accidental caregiver. When Kevin, the love of her life, was diagnosed with Parkinson's and Lewy body dementia at age 56, Marie tackled life full on, seeking ways to bring meaning and purpose to both of their lives. Realizing that his passion to paint drove his daily living, she became his agent and identified a goal of fundraising for research into a disease which kills most within 8 years of diagnosis. Kevin is at year 8. He is very much alive. This film is a testament to Marie's relentless documentation of their intense and often joyful journey together.
Yeah, that's great. This is a guy who's full of life. Can't wait to get out and get up and do things because he only has a certain amount of time left on the planet. So he knows that he's got a finite end to his life. And of course, leave anything so people know what he was and who he was. Now is the time to do it. And you can see he's got braces on his ankles. His knees bent, so he's having difficulty with his gait pattern. But he's got a little sly smile on his face. He's looking at himself and going, that's right, I'll have the last laugh.
Since his diagnosis, and with Marie's direction, Kevin has developed the tools to suggest what's going on in his head and to raise over $200,000 for research. Being a painter is a new job Kevin never would have imagined before his diagnosis. Being a caregiver, Marie says, is the one job Kevin did not encourage her to apply for.
What can I do to help?
Sweaters on me. Put your sweater on me.
2015 was the diagnosis. I figured we had 2 to 5 years. I didn't think they were going to be great years, and I thought they were going to start good and go down. They started messy. There was depression. There was huge anxiety. Our children had to cope. It was deeply disturbing for everyone to know that this wonderful relationship and my wonderful partner was going to be dying of a disease that we just didn't see coming.
As I grapple with the truth, I'm grappling with the fact that I'm living with someone who has a significant disability. Life will never be the same. And I am not going to fight it anymore. And that has already made all the difference.
Okay, honey. I was not expecting to find you outside.
What's that?
Where are you going? The brakes are on. And what was it you were trying to do outside? Okay, did you want to paint?
Yes.
Because you were sitting outside on the wet ground with this canvas. Is there something going on that you want to tell me about?
When life happens to you, if you're lucky, you have choices, and then you make certain decisions. So Kevin had to retire as a judge. And I was not quite ready to retire. It was not obvious to me that this was going to transpire as quickly as it did. And then we got the Lewy body dementia disease. I went, oh my gosh, okay, we've got to take this full on.
And while it is true that Marie was not quite ready to retire, she did so with her typical panache on stage at Massey Hall. A believer in the mantra, it's fun to have fun, but you have to know how, she led a sing-along, danced with Kevin, and basked in tributes from family, friends, and colleagues. They praised her career as an undercover public servant and her considerable contributions to civic life in Toronto.
Good morning. It is Friday, November 29th, and here we have Kevin on the floor. What's going on today, Kev?
I'm just having a bit of a freeze.
A bit of a freeze? This doesn't look like a freeze to me. Looks like a, I saw the execution of the fall. It was kind of dramatically, it was dramatized. What's going on here? Okay, slowly. Do you want to turn around and say hello to the people?
Hello, people. Hey.
And I've gotten remarkably good at just watching him fall because he's a bit of a rubber band. So, except for the time that he actually rolled down the stairs and hit his knee and cracked the drywall wide open, then bounced back up after he fainted, and then off we went on a little day trip. Except for that time, he's never looked like he was going to hurt himself significantly. So he bounces back. So I've learned to just to say, okay, we're going to film this because, you know what, it might be useful for the neurologist to see his mobility, to see how he's fainting. And most people don't get to see that side of the disease. It's Parkinson's related, it's medication related. And luckily my filming has not resulted in any aggravation of his fall.
So here you have the poster boy of the wheelchair slide. Well, I have to say, you certainly know how to make the best of what can only be described as a bit of a messy situation. Would you like to go down to the cottage now, dear?
Yes.
Okay.
Let's go.
This is the part that nobody sees. And we actually don't spend a lot of time dwelling on it because life's too short. Just long nights. And they can be messy nights. And the days are completely unpredictable. So what I may tell a story about might capture some of that unpredictability. And what I am feeling is rarely shared with anyone because A, there's no one around. And B, you know, it's really important that Kevin feel that everything is under control. So I've had to learn how to really control my own range of emotions because I can be quite emotional. So I really learned to stay calm and to just really focus on what makes us stronger together.
Okay, you've got the, you can put the brakes on and then you can let the brakes off. You sure you're up for this?
Yeah.
Okay, let's try it again.
You want me to climb up?
Yeah, so let's see how, if you were seated in a chair in the bathtub, how you would get out of that. So just looking at what makes sense to you. Use the grab bars if you can see them.
Mm-hmm. So one of the things with a neurological disease is that you think about it as just being inside the brain, but it's like any disease. It involves your whole body, especially when it's a brain disease. So what we realized early on was that exercise, and Kevin has always known this, he's always been very active, he has a phys ed degree, he would go to the Y, he would put a shame to most people on the whatever machine he was using. We realized that exercise had to be part of his routine even as his limbs started to fail him. And so he still uses now a recumbent bicycle. It's an old school one, but he's on it often 20 minutes to 30 minutes a day. He does exercise every morning. We went to see a physiotherapist and she realized that especially during the pandemic, he wasn't getting enough thigh exercise. So those were starting to atrophy. So he does with me, I do my Tai Chi while he's doing his thigh strengthening exercises. And then there's some very basic stuff. The stuff that all our family doctors have been telling us for years. Food, exercise, sleep, family, friends. And if you can get the right balance of all of that, then life's going to be good no matter what you're going through. And so we have learned, both before the disease and after, to live well.
So while Marie's law career and extensive volunteer work came to an early halt, her abundant creative energy has been redirected professionally as a fundraiser and personally as a dynamic caregiver.
The reason that we're going to stay living here in the Eastern Townships is because it's calm, there's very few distractions, and the quality of life, just the forest bathing, I mean, you look around where we are here, it's just spectacularly beautiful and quiet. We're in an old growth hemlock forest, and it brings just such a natural sanity. And Kevin is just so happy.
No changes at all to anything.
I mean, there are definitely moments when I think, oh my gosh, what's gonna happen next? Can I actually manage this in the short term? Like the medium and the long term, I don't have time to think about. And everybody has different coping mechanisms, and someone once said that I'm really good at bringing order to chaos, but I'm really good at putting chaos when there's order. So I don't really spend a lot of time thinking about it. I don't have that kind of time. My coping mechanisms have evolved. I did take up meditation, and I did several 120-day 10-minute meditations for during the pandemic. And it really does make a difference because it's about training your brain to calm down. And I do Tai Chi, which I've been doing for a long time, and I don't do it as regularly and as for as long as I want, but sometimes you just need 2 or 3 minutes. It's like breathing. So if I can actually learn to pause in the moment, that's been my most significant accomplishment. Just learning to breathe out, stop and pause before I move into the next crisis management mode or grumpy Marie Jewelbox bunny face.
It's a very sort of aggressive bunny. You see where the cut of the jaw and the face up. And the heat's put on it, so it's turning up the heat, which means you're going to be tested.
And how do you feel when I bark at you?
Oh, I love it.
What part of barking makes
all of it is so wonderful.
When do I bark at you?
Anytime you want.
More than once a day?
No.
Twice a day?
Well, maybe.
This is the tricky part here, Kevin.
I know it's tricky.
Okay, so maybe put the brakes on the walker. You know how you pull down the little bars? No, they're off now. Squeeze them. When you squeeze them, they slow down. That's good. Squeeze. That's great. That's great. Okay. Woo!
Oh, sorry.
For the most part, it's like any intimate relationship. There's ups and downs. The memory loss is a problem because there's a lot of repetition. And like most of us, we remember and hear what we want to remember and hear. Kevin's no different. It's just he requires a little bit more help. So there'll be forgetful moments. There'll be moments where it's actually a problem, like we'll lose things, like his harmonica. Oh my gosh, we've gone through so many expensive harmonicas.
Good lap drum.
One would never figure that I have a terminal illness.
Life has gotten better since the disease, both because we've adjusted, and he has almost, he would say he's in remission, which is great. And when you see him and have conversations with him now compared to 5 years ago, he's much more animated and is able to draw on all of the huge, huge database that is his brilliant brain. Like he just taps into information and connects dots and tells stories, and it's really quite remarkable.
My job as an artist or painter is to assemble information from what I experience and serve that up to you on a plate so you can draw your own conclusions about what this means or doesn't mean, or that I'm just full of shit.
Does this one have a name?
I think I'm going to call it Scarecrow, but not...
Scarecrow, interesting. Reminiscent of Wizard of Oz. What was your character in The Wizard of Oz?
Scarecrow.
Were you the Scarecrow? I thought you were Tin Man.
I was cast as the
Tin Man?
No, I was described as the same.
You were the Scarecrow?
Yeah. They wanted me to do it, even though I wanted to do it.
What did you want to do?
I wanted to
be the wizard?
I wanted to be Dorothy.
Dorothy!
Total control. You need your get your dog so you can stick him if they get trouble.
That's great.
You know, for the most part, I don't think anyone who has lived with someone with dementia or a disease would think there's much different about our life. But most people don't live with dementia or a neurological disease. So you just get on with it. And I'm so, so grateful that he has the kind of, his personality by default is loving and generous and kind and patient. I have some of those, definitely not the patience. And he is just, he makes it easy. Sure, I'm at his beck and call, and people say, oh, you know, he's got you wrapped around his finger. That's fine. At least he's telling me what he needs, which for most of our relationship, he was zero maintenance. I was the high maintenance partner. People would say you still are, but he was zero maintenance. He would do what he needed to do, never got in the way, never asked for help. And that's all changed. And he's now learned, okay, maybe sometimes I should ask for help before I fall down the stairs.
It's a little after 9 a.m. and you are doing it your way, which includes coming down the stairs. Would you like to sing it?
Absolutely. All right, here it goes. Da 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 da. And now we face the final curtain. Of this I'm certain.
What's that?
Just out for a rip.
Just out for a rip.
Nice evening.
TV. To my girl. My stallion.
I never thought that the disease would play itself out in this way, that's for sure. I certainly appreciate all the sort of convergence of different things in my life that provide this opportunity.
How are you feeling now about your life?
I'm feeling great about my life. I'm feeling like I've been able to do so many of the things that I wanted to do. And so there's still room to, there's still headroom. And knowing that my children have seen this in me and in you, this love of culture and this love of family is all sort of tied in together. And like I said, I feel very fortunate to have been able to take advantage of the opportunities that are coming my way.
While Kevin's paintings capture the tension of how both his brain and body work together and against each other, Marie's documentation of daily living with dementia celebrates Kevin's creative genius. Focusing now on their ninth fundraising exhibit, Kevin and Marie are truly stronger together and a testament to the human spirit.
So, sure, you know, I didn't expect to be doing this, and I knew you didn't expect to be doing this, but it's just a question of living the best life.
Yeah, I think that's right. And sometimes I think, what would happen if this Parkinson's stuff never occurred, and my trajectory, life trajectory was going to say, I don't think I'd be very happy with that. Maybe the alternative being a formal lifestyle, being judged. So, you know, it's almost as if I'm saying to myself, boy, I bet you if you could go back and not have Parkinson's, I don't know if I'd like that. Because what it's giving me is, you know, I've sort of been put on notice as a human being that here's a gift of 5 years or 10 years. And do something with it.
Would you like to sit up until we lose you? Because that was pretty powerful. Here we go. Say to people who are facing it, don't think it's all downhill, because it might actually be uphill in a good way. So we are living our best life. We're absolutely living our best life, and I didn't see that coming, and I'm so grateful.
Oh my goodness, it's like the second or third time that I've watched it, and I just constantly feel so incredibly moved by this documentary, and I'm kind of speechless, so I just got to regroup here. First and foremost, Marie, where does your resilience come from?
Oh my goodness. So this is going to sound kind of funny, but I think I'm resilient because I learned to drive stick shift when I was a Sherbrooke Hussar in the militia in the 70s. So I've learned to change gears pretty smoothly, and my jobs always involve things being thrown at me, and I thrive. I'm told that I thrive in a chaotic environment. So I'm well trained in chaos, and dementia is a disease that just throws chaos at you because it's different for everybody. There's so many different kinds and we're just learning. So I'd say my resilience comes from also from my parents. They were both immigrants. They met in Canada. And it's really useful, I think, to reflect on how one's parents' challenges inform our own lives. And also, you know, Kevin gives me so much love and respect so that even on the worst day, which is usually a messy day where I'm less patient and probably exhausted, he is always respectful and always loving. And that is such a gift. It's always been a gift in our relationship, but he's essentially, he is creating a healthy environment for us both to thrive in. And I think the last thing, and this is not to be underestimated, we are both the beneficiaries of good pensions. And that income security means that we don't have to worry about money. And that is really, really huge because for so many people, especially when you get older, but we were in our 50s and 60s when we took early retirement. That has given us a gift. We've been able to travel. And that's very much what has informed my own resilience. The last, oh, sorry, yes?
No, I was going to just add to that, you know, when I work with family members, I mean, unfortunately, dementia is probably one of the most expensive diseases to manage when it comes to finances. And when you ask many families, what is your stress? The number, in addition to the disease progressing, it always comes down to finances, right? Because you need to supplement whatever care you may or may not be receiving from the government with private care. And it does put a lot of stress on families.
Yes, for sure. So for example, our benefits, because we both have the same private insurer, all his medication is 100% covered. That's like $12,000 a year. And then all the other things that we submit for our taxes are expenses that for people who don't have pensions, you know, I did my taxes yesterday. It was almost $1,500 in diapers. Mm-hmm. And this is the beginning stages of us using diapers. And Kevin's very candid about all of this. He likes to show off his gray briefs versus his white briefs. So it's great fun.
So I think one of the questions, though, that, you know, I had when I was watching the documentary, and I'm sure many care partners have, is what do your low moments look like?
You know, I knew you were going to ask me that. And I thought, OK, what is the answer? Because it requires a degree of self-awareness. And I know that in my low moments, I'm much less self-aware. So what I did is I asked a few people that I know what their answer would be if they were asked this question about me. And I asked my son and some of my besties, and my son said, you know, you develop pinhole vision. He says your short memory, term memory ends up being shot. I tend to repeat things more than once, and I manifest, and I love this part, higher than usual irritability. And so I said, okay, well, and he doesn't live with us, but he would have seen over the years, he would have seen me go from having more energy to less energy and being less patient. And patience, as you know from the film, is not my forte. Another best friend who's known me since she was 10, she said, basically, you have less tolerance for the foibles of others, and that I get frustrated when I'm not able to be as patient with Kevin as I want to be. And the other thing she said is that my default setting is to gravitate to be at the heart of the excitement and the crowd. I live off that energy. She says, but now you crave quiet time and time to just be by yourself, which is true. Most of my life, I've never wanted to be by myself. I'm always looking for excitement. So I think, you know, essentially that's what it looks like for an outsider. But I asked my newest BFF this morning, and this is a story that I think she illustrated beautifully by describing me in a comic strip. She said, I see you walking down the road, call a country road. And as the burdens start to pile on your shoulders, whether it's the stresses of your children or the pets requiring care or the kitchen renovation, you know, the luxury of first world problems, the kitchen renovation not being completed, she said that my body, my figure on the road starts to curl in onto itself until it finally hits the dirt road as a splat. And she says, when it hits the road as the splat, she says, all of the people that surround you cannot pull you up. They're encircling you with love and they tried to pull you up, but it hurts you too much. And she says, and that tends to happen when you see Kevin's illness visibly progressing. So that's kind of the breaking point in my low moment. And we just moved from the first floor of our home to from the second floor of our home where Kevin climbed upstairs every day to the first floor. Huge rite of passage. And we both know it signals the next stage of the disease. And I was at a very low moment. So I know exactly what she means. And she says, that's when I tend to bark at people. And that's what I call it, barking. I rarely bite, but I tend to bark at people. So there you go.
So when I came to meet you for the first time in person, and I came to your home where you and Kevin live, and which is shown in the documentary, and it's not a huge space, I remember one of the first questions I asked you was, what type of support structure do you have in place for yourself? Do you remember that question?
Oh, yes. You know, and it is the caregiver question of the decade, right? Because none of us as caregivers can ever say, oh, it's easy. I have everything in place. It's a piece of cake. So for me, my support structures have improved significantly just in the past few months because I've been able to tap into the service à domicile with the Quebec government program. So in particular, the MAGOG CLSC now sends me regular support to workers that are paid for through the Quebec program, which is called Chèque Emploi Service, Service Employment Paycheck. And I now know, and I share this for everyone's benefit, when you have a disease as complicated as dementia with the kind of demands it places on you, the social worker told me I'm entitled to the maximum number of hours of help per week, which if I can find people is 35 hours a week of help of people I can choose. So that's just coming into place now. And those people can do anything that I identify as a need to help keep me as a healthy caregiver and keep Kevin healthy. So that's huge.
So at the end of the documentary, you both proclaim that life has gotten better after the disease. That's an outstanding statement. Can you elaborate a bit more?
So when the disease was first diagnosed, I was just finishing about, I'm going to say, year 10 of therapy, psychotherapy with this wonderful doctor. And I had been seeing her so I could become a better person, a better partner, a better parent. And I said to her, you know how I was saying, once we're finished with the kids, we're going to start talking about my relationship with Kevin? She said, yeah. I said, well, I said that to you because things have been changing and I couldn't quite figure it out. But now I know we have this diagnosis. And she said to me, well, you now have a crystal ball. Make good use of it. And it was such a significant insight because I tend to be optimistic. I tend not to be sad very often. It's not my default. And so I realized that was essentially a call to make the most out of our life together. And when Kevin started to actively paint and we brought back these huge canvases from California because we began to travel once the diagnosis was made, I thought, okay, my best friend said, maybe he should have a show. So I threw myself into that. And that helped both of us give us a real sense of purpose. He painted for his shows. He's had 9 shows. I became his impresario and we fundraised. So we had all of these activities that are so important if you can create them in your life to give you a sense of meaningful purpose, because you can keep busy. Anyone can keep busy. You can clean bathrooms and scrub floors and do laundry and count pills and, you know, but for me, it was really having a bigger purpose for both of us, giving meaning to both of our lives. So that essentially is really made a difference to both of us. And then, and Kevin talks about it at the end of the film, you know, our children, like this is a really horrible diagnosis. And when you already know that the grandparents or the aunt had something similar. As a child, you kind of see your whole life ending. It becomes about you. So having them see that we can laugh through this, that we can live through the ups and downs, the slides up and down the stairs, the messiness, that's been really important for both of us, because life does not end. And if you're lucky enough to be able to see the silver linings, so if the cat wakes me up in the middle of the night and I have to let him out, I look up and maybe I'll see the moon. It's a full moon tonight, actually, so the pink moon, I'm told. Or maybe there's some other beauty that I'll get to observe in the very moment. So it's really given me, and I know that you can relate to this, the real appreciation of what it means to live in the now, to stop and go, okay, I'm washing the dishes. Oh my gosh, there's a deer. Oh, that deer is coming to eat the cedar hedge. Oh, we don't like that deer anymore, but at least to appreciate that moment.
Mm-hmm. And one final question. I mean, since the documentary, it's been many months have gone by now. So how is Kevin now?
He actually has become, the disease fluctuates. So today, yesterday, and the day before, he was great. He actually went to this sports center for Paralympic athletes in Sherbrooke that focuses on neurocognitive diseases, and he worked out, and maybe he'll even go today, which would be twice in 1 week, which he hasn't done before. Last week he had delirium caused by constipation, and I've been monitoring these symptoms very closely, and I didn't see it coming. So it really goes up and down, and when that happens, like most of us, our brains can only process when significant things are happening in the body, one thing at a time. So yesterday was a great day. Today is another day. But overall, he remains positive, which is really where I find my own sense of strength. And he is so generous about how he views my role. So while he doesn't understand it necessarily, and he will forget that I'm doing all of these things and want to do things that he can't do, it's those are literally just things, little edges of irritations that hardly matter at all.
You and Kevin are truly a symbol of resilience and hope, which everyone needs, you know, and I'm so grateful again to have had you on our webcast and to have this opportunity to air and show the world this incredible documentary that you have done. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And, you know, there's one thing I want to mention that I didn't refer to, which might be of interest. Part of the role that you play and that I play is we meet people. And one person came into my life just last week through a caregiving workshop, and she sent me a clip of this film. It's a film of a couple in France, and the woman's name is Colette, and she was looking after her husband Jean. And in the film, she talks about the importance of paying attention to your, she didn't call it tone of voice, but she described this story, and she says, I gave him a set of pruning shears and I showed him in the garden the bush I wanted him to prune. And he ended up pruning that bush and he pruned the rose bush beside it, which didn't have any roses. So for him, they were the same thing. And I yelled at him. And then the next morning, I had kind of forgotten that, says Colette. And he looked at me and he said, I'm sorry, I don't remember your name. And she said, oh my goodness, that rupture in our trust in our relationship when I yelled at him created enough of an imbalance that it may very well have triggered that memory loss. So it was a hugely, hugely both insightful and shocking reminder to me that our tone of voice and the way we express ourselves is actually the most honor and love we can give is through our voice to our loved one, because hearing is the last thing to go. So it was a real reminder to me to really focus on behaving myself.
Yeah, such important advice. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Claire.
So this webcast is an initiative of the McGill University Dementia Education Program, which is funded by private donations. If you would like to make a contribution towards Marie and Kevin's fundraising initiative for us, please visit us at mcgill.ca/dementia. There will be a link to the fundraising initiative. If you would like to join our mailing list to be notified about upcoming episodes of McGill Cares, as well as other important programs and resources from us, please email us at dementia@mcgill.ca or sign up on our website. Thank you for watching.